Yes, it was rough on so many levels. I barely knew her, but my heart would have gone out to a total stranger in her situation. Alone, sick, and with a kid. My kid. We did DNA tests to verify that Ethan was my son, got the legality settled, and she stayed with a friend in New York for the last few weeks of her life while Ethan came to live with me. I helped out some, and he visited her. Not much longer after that, she passed away. Everything was quite sudden.
He blows out a long stream of air as he brings the story back to the present.
That's how I suddenly became parent to a 7-year-old I had no idea existed.
I shake my head, processing Ethan's story. Liam's story. How did he deal with it? Losing his mother and then making such a dramatic change.
He was devastated. He cried himself to sleep almost every night, understandably. And I didn't know how the hell to help him deal with so many losses. His mother and his home. His whole life.
The tightness in his voice gives me a window into how frustrated and helpless Liam must have felt. He doesn't linger there, though.
Fortunately, I'm close with my mom and dad, so mom came east and spent some time with us. Her sister, my Aunt Jane, lives in New York, too. They all helped me figure it out, and I found a great child psychologist who helped Ethan process his grief.
Liam flashes a quick, relieved grin.
I'm lucky. He came through the other side and is remarkably well-adjusted. We get on great, and we're thick as thieves now. But it makes me wonder all the time how life would have been with him at 2, 3, 4.
He drifts off, turning wistful, maybe a bit sad even, longing for the time missed, the years they didn't have together. You would have loved each other back then like you do now, I say. Not sure if that will make him feel better or miss the time even more. But I don't think your connection is weakened by not having those years. You were there when it mattered. He shoots me a soft smile.
I'd like to think so, but I'll never know.
He sighs as though recalibrating before moving on.
In any case, here we are now. It's the strangest thing. 3.5 years ago, I didn't know he existed. But now he's my whole world in one pint-sized person,
he says, wrapping up the story with a happy ending full of awe and joy. Sounds like parenthood to me, I say with a smile. He deals me one in return.
Yeah, I suppose it is. I don't have as much experience as you, but I'm learning.
From what I've seen, you're doing a great job, I say. I'm glad Ethan's mom was able to find you and that you could give him the family that he needed.
Me too. It changed everything. And at first, it was such a shock, I didn't know if I could handle it. But now, I can't imagine life without him.
Kids have a way of doing that, don't they?
That they do,
he says as he surveys the cafe teeming with shopped-out young families with babies and toddlers and tykes.
That they definitely do.
And now, is it still you and him against the world?
I suppose it is, but I hope not forever,
he says, taking another bite of his sandwich, looking a little lost in thought. Those are words that make me think, too. Not forever. Do they mean what they seem? That even though he's definitely single, he might not be for long. So you're looking to settle down? He offers me a sheepish smile.
Yes. I've dated, had my fun, and it doesn't really appeal to me anymore. I'm almost 40, and at this point, yeah, I'd like to find someone to settle down with. Be a family. Have what my parents have. It was lovely to grow up with both my parents, see them support each other, love each other. Even through my dark, rebellious days as a teen, I knew I had them. I'd like Ethan to have that same security.
I gulp at his directness, but mostly from the rarity of a man coming right out and saying he wants something that many men won't admit to wanting. You want more kids, then? My throat is unexpectedly dry. His shrug says he wouldn't mind more munchkins at all. His gaze travels around the cafe as if he's saying, yes, let's order the mac and cheese feast like that table over there, or check out those parents slicing up lingonberry pancakes for their kiddos. He returns his eyes to me, startlingly vulnerable when he admits,
if it happened, I wouldn't object. I'd like more. I like it.
He takes a beat, then in the most earnest tone I've ever heard says,
And I'd like to be there every day for my kid.
My heart bangs loudly in my chest and at the same time tries to flee to a corner to hide. The sentiment is wildly endearing. It would have hooked me like a trout if I were single in my 20s. My God, if I'd met him then and he'd said those things, I'd have flung myself at him and begged him to take me to bed and make babies with me right that instant. Heck, I'd have grabbed him and tugged him into the chair fort to procreate. But with a teen who's entering her sophomore year of high school, with a business I'm finally getting off the ground, with a life I'm finally living on my own terms, one that took more than a decade to realize, I don't want to start over. I don't want that. At all. I'm not in the market for more babies, for another pregnancy. And for a second, no, for several seconds, my heart is an anchor, weighing me down with a heaviness I shouldn't feel. After all, the man lives next door to me. That's reason enough to shove all these errant tingles into a metaphorical closet and ignore them until they go away. Surely they'll go away soon. These tingles come from airborne lust particles, from the yummy, clean, woodsy scent of him, from the empirically handsome face he happens to possess. That's all. He's easy on the eyes. Nothing more. I'll adjust, get used to it, and I won't think twice about the flip my heart executes when he flashes those big brown eyes at me. I fasten on a smile. Since you want a family, I'd say it's a good thing we moved you away from the man cave furniture, I say, doing my best to keep the mood light. I sweep my arm out to indicate the store and the mission of the day. You're getting a whole new look for the settling down phase of your life.
No more bachelor pad furniture, thanks to your help.
He takes a beat, then with serious eyes, he asks,
What about you? Any settling down in your future? More kids?
I gasp, shrinking back. More kids? No, I'm still working up the nerve to adopt a cat. With my kid a mere 3 years away from college, I stop to pat my belly. I'm good with keeping the shop closed.
Cat, kid, what's the difference, really?
He asks, holding his hands out as if weighing both options.
And when will this cat come into your life?
Ripley? His forehead knits in confusion.
What's that?
I'm going to name my future cat Ripley.
Not every other week or 1982.
I stare sharp knives at him. Ripley, as in the badass alien hunter from Four Flicks.
Do you want your future cat to hunt aliens?
Look, if aliens are coming, that's a damn good time to have an alien hunting cat.
True. I like a woman who plans ahead,
he says.
When will we meet, Ripley?
I shrug. Took me long enough to start my business. I bet it takes me longer to commit to a pet. It could be anywhere from 3 days to 10 years. And what about you? When are you going to start dating? The question comes out sticky, like each word is glued to my tongue. But what the hell? He can date. He should date.
Soon, very soon.
Online, I presume?
Tinder, here I come.
He sounds excited, but there's some trepidation, too.
Once I get settled in at my dad's practice, I'll start up a loves to cook, shower you with gifts, and give foot rubs profile. Think that's a good dating profile name?
I mean, maybe, I tease. The only edit, I suppose, would be also good in bed. Maybe that was too flirty. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
Oh,
he says with a sly grin.
You suppose I'm good in bed?
My mouth falls open as a flush creeps across my cheeks. I hold up my hands, not wanting to touch that one, even though I started it. He taps my toe with his.
Come on. You think I'm probably good in bed? I give off good in bed vibes, don't I?
And the flush turns into flames. I'm pleading the fifth.
Look, you can sense the truth. I get it. And let's just be up front. Like you were about the furniture.
He leans a little closer, dropping his voice.
You're completely right, but...
His tone goes low and smoky as he shoots me a dangerous look.
We can call it great in bed.
A myriad of risque thoughts gallop through my brain, runaway horses heating me up. I have got to wrest control of this conversation. So I take a breath, imagine the air clearing away filthy thoughts of saddling him up for a wild Mustang ride, and say, "You came to the right town. The women will be lining up for a guy who cooks, loves animals, and is great in bed."
"That's all I've ever wanted,"
he teases. As we leave, I'm keenly aware of a few key facts. One, I'm glad he moved next door. Two, he already feels like a friend. Three, he is going to be such a hot commodity in Duck Falls. Later that evening, Alva, though not in the market, texts me to get a jump on everyone else for the details. She asks how the shopping trip went, but I know what she really means, because she follows up with a gif of a doe-eyed celebrity batting her lashes and saying, "Tell me more." January. He's everything all the women in town whispered he'd be. Alva. You lucky bitch, you get to live next door to him. January. How does that make me lucky exactly? Alva. Because you can just climb out your window when you want to bang him. January. Yes, of course. I'll sneak across the front lawn barefoot in my nightgown and get some lovin'. Alva. Now you're talking. Anyway, so what's next? January. With Liam? What's next is we are neighbors, nothing more. Alva. Sigh. I was hoping for a good story. Make one up for me, will ya? January. Does that mean 15 years of marriage and 3 kids is getting a bit dull? Alva. On the contrary, I was hoping your story would be all I needed to jump my hubs after a long day. And hey, it worked. Okay, thanks, bye. January. I didn't even tell you a story. Alva. I made one up in my head, and now I'm going to pretend I'm 16 again and sneaking across the lawn to bang my high school sweetheart. January. I hate you and your perfect love life. Alva. Sorry, not sorry. Love you madly, too. See you at B&B night next week. January. Board games and booze. I never miss it. Alva. And I never miss sex with the hubs. Gonna go chase me some O's. I close the text thread with my bestie. Glad she's still happy. Glad she's still in love and lust with her guy after all these years. Glad for her, since I don't want that for myself. Even though I am keenly aware of a fourth fact concerning Liam. I'm the slightest bit jealous of the women he'll date, and the slightest bit annoyed that I'm not in the market. Because I'm absolutely not shopping. Not at all. Not one bit. I've only now gotten through a divorce and come out on the other side of sadness. I won't tango with my next door neighbor, a man who wants more kids. I resolve to be the best of friends with him, and only friends.
Chapter 9. Liam. A few days later, while Ethan is still asleep, I hop on my bike at the crack of dawn and ride. The sun climbs above the hilly terrain of this edge of wine country town, warming my shoulders as I crest the final slope of a long, hard climb. Reaching the top, I flash back to my conversation at IKEA with January. As the glorious descent calls out to me, my legs and lungs crying for relief, my mind zooms in on the possibilities of dating. After all, dating isn't new to me. I enjoyed my 20s in New York, thank you very much. My early 30s too. And my mid-30s. Hell, it's not as if I stopped dating when Ethan appeared on my doorstep. Scheduling became more complicated, but I still went out from time to time, enjoying the city, dining in new restaurants, attending ball games, checking out the top 10 small-batch ice cream shops. Ice cream is a priority. Love? Not so much up until now. I came close a few times, or at least I think I did. I'm pretty sure it was love with my college girlfriend Anna, though I might be basing that mostly on the stepped barefoot on a Lego pane I felt when she dumped me. My first broken heart had me wallowing in misery so deep that my dad took it upon himself to comfort me, assuring me that it wouldn't last forever and that someday I wouldn't be sad over that girl. And it was true. I stopped being sad about Anna long before I stopped feeling outraged that she left me for a long-haired, flannel-wearing bloke who fronted for a band called Tirade, which sounded like Soundgarden imitating Alice in Chains, imitating Pearl Jam, imitating Nirvana. And Anna thought Tirade was fantastic. Who was this girl? Had she always had such horrible taste in music? Had she only pretended to like the bands I'd introduced her to? Bands like Snow Patrol, Radiohead, and the Foo Fighters. So maybe it was less of a broken heart and more of an existential crisis. Later in my 20s, there was Brittany with an I, who ran a dog rescue in the city. I handled all of their spays and neuters. We bonded over a love of animals and sex with an O, but eventually realized we had nothing to discuss outside of bed besides dogs and cats. There was Stella, a baker I met through my friend Summer. It started as a match made in sugary heaven. She needed a taste tester for her recipes, and I needed calories to burn as I trained for the centuries I was riding. We fell into friendship and wound up the best of mates. In fact, I took my next girlfriend as my date to her wedding. Now, as I fly down this California hill on my bike, hugging the curves of the road, I look back at my serial monogamy without regret. There are no dreadful mistakes in my romantic past. No clingers or crazies. No one who cheated, stole, or banged my best mate. Sure, I haven't met the one, but I'm fortunate to have met plenty of women I liked. And if I managed that without trying, then the search for Ms. Wright should be a piece of cake. Ethan and I both long for a family, but I'm not scouting for a mother replacement for him. I'm looking for me, dating for me, because I want what I haven't found yet, what my parents have, what my sister has. I see it in clients who come in as couples, doting over the brand new tortoiseshell kitten or floppy-eared puppy they've acquired, doting on each other as they take the next step in their togetherness. It's there in the bookstore when I spot a pair checking out books, showing each other things they know will make them think or laugh or just enjoy. In the park with my son, I see how the other parents are with each other, holding hands as the kids play. Love has been on my mind a lot since Ethan came into my life. I make my way home, cycling past emerald green grass and acres of grapes, and let myself imagine that kind of life. And as I slow my pace at the end of my ride, turning onto Mallard Lane, I let those thoughts fade away, shelving them for now. There will be time later to tackle all those wishes. I roll past the houses on my street, which still feels a little like a foreign land, but it's a map I'm beginning to learn. My yellow home comes into view, and beyond that is January's light blue one with the unmistakable ladybug mailbox in the front. There's something even better there too. My neighbor. I stop my bike in front of my house, dismount, and wheel it to hers, where I lean it against the white picket fence. January is in her garden, picking green beans, it looks like. She shoots me a devilish look as she snaps one off and waggles it in my direction. I make the sign of the cross to ward it off, and she cracks up and climbs to her feet, swiping her hair away from her face. She pushes her sunglasses on top of her head, and I take mine off too, tucking them in the neck of my bike shirt before I undo my helmet and rest it on the handlebars.
"How can a vet hate veggies? Doctors shouldn't hate veggies," she says.
"I'm a DVM."
"Same idea."
"It's not the same at all. And actually, most of my patients detest green beans too." She raises her eyebrows.
"So it rubbed off on you? A dog's dislike of veggies?"
I smile. "Seems to be the case." A wicked glint crosses her eyes.
"I should make my sautéed green beans for you. I bet you'd change your mind."
I rub my ear. "Did you say cupcakes? If you did, I would be delighted to try them." She ignores my comment.
"They're so delicious, Liam," she says,
sounding so enticing that she almost tricks me into thinking I could like the veggie dish.
"A little garlic, a little olive oil, a little salt and pepper. I swear, they melt in your mouth."
I stroke my chin and hum out loud. "I feel like you have a fundamental misunderstanding of what happens when vegetables go past your lips. Chocolate melts. Green beans don't." She laughs, dragging a hand through her hair, which drifts on the breeze, like she's advertising air or water or some other essential.
"I promise you won't be able to resist them," she says,
still trying to reel me in. "It's not the green beans I can't seem to resist, though. It's this beauty with the spray of freckles and bright blue eyes." "Try me," I say, then toss out a counter-challenge. But I guarantee you won't be able to resist my brownies.
You're a baker?
She asks, sounding like I just announced I'm an astronaut. I'm pretty good in the kitchen, I smirk. You should see what I can do with a KitchenAid.
Wait.
She holds up a hand to pause the conversation.
You said you love to cook, but there's a difference between enjoying something and being good at it.
Oh, I'm good. I lean in closer and whisper like it's a dirty secret. The best.
Wow. Good in bed and good in the kitchen. How is that possible?
I give an if-you've-got-it flaunted shrug. Like I said, I'm a hot commodity. Oh, wait. You're the one who said that. She laughs.
I did say that. Speaking of, when does the great dating escapade begin?
She taps her wrist, but there's no watch there. Still, tick-tock. Soon. Actually, I guess I could start today. I suppose I should get on the apps, at least. She shoos me away.
Get moving, then, Liam.
But I don't leave, and I don't think she wants me to either, judging from the smile she's sporting, the one that matches mine. We stand there for a moment, and neither of us says anything. The silence feels awkward, like perhaps we ought to fill it. Maybe with questions, like the kind I'd ask if I invited her over for dinner. We'd cook, crack open a bottle of wine, and I'd find out what she likes most about living here, what makes her happy, what makes her sad, what makes her tick. But I don't ask any of those things, because that's not the conversation we're having or going to have. Instead, I return to her other question, answering as best I can. I suppose I better make that good in bed profile tonight.
Are you ready to take the plunge?
Am I? That's a damn good question. As ready as I can be. I pat where the pockets would be on my bike shorts, as if checking for my keys and wallet. Small talk, check. Questions about the other person, check. Skin as thick as a rhino's, check. Chuckling, she shakes her head.
Ability to make a rhino sound both appealing and off-putting, check.
I guess I am ready then. I try to imagine what this great dating escapade will look like, as I admit to the ladies of the apps that I hate green beans and love brownies and enjoy a good audiobook on science and live for long, punishing bike rides that make my thigh scream and clear my mind of whatever is weighing on it. A hard ride is blissful oblivion. Except today, for some reason, with the trip down relationship memory lane. The thoughts of love and dating have dug in deep, and they're hard to bat away when they're tied to my plans for the near future.
You're brave, Liam, she says,
her voice kind, almost like a gentle caress. How's that? I ask.
For putting yourself out there.
I look for sarcasm, but it seems to be a true and earnest compliment. I like the sound of it. I like the feel of it. You think so?
I do. It takes courage to be honest about what you want, like you were with me at IKEA.
Her smile is so warm, so inviting. It's like the blue sky above. But am I braver than her? Than this woman standing in her garden, who's been equally forthright? You're honest too, about what you want, what you don't want. She simply shrugs and shakes her head.
I don't know. It seems easier to shut down an idea than to open up to one. Is it courageous to say I'm not interested?
I nod and keep nodding, like the movement of my head can underscore the truth of my words. Yes, I think it is. Knowing and saying what you don't want is just as brave, maybe more. She lifts her chin, looking a little bit proud, and taps me on the shoulder in playful acknowledgement.
Then we're both brave.
We'll be brave together, just in different ways.
Yes, I'll hold down Fort Single, and you trek into the dating wilds, she says,
sweeping her arm out wide, as if to indicate the rocky terrain I'm about to traverse. Rocky indeed. Sounds like a plan. That evening, I find a white Pyrex dish on my porch with a note affixed to it. I unfold the paper, an unexpected warmth bursting in my chest, chased by a widening smile as I read. I promise these will melt in your mouth. They are a guaranteed tastegasm. I laugh, reading the note one more time, staring at the curves in her handwriting, the deliberate neatness of it. She writes like I bet she builds cabinets, determined, orderly and organized, but with a little bit of flair and panache. Flair? Panache? What the bloody hell? What am I now? A crime scene investigator? A handwriting analyst? I blink the thoughts away, take the offending vegetables inside, and then serve them to Ethan at dinner time. He surveys them skeptically, but he's more daring with this food group than I am. So he takes a bite and murmurs, "These are strangely, sort of, kind of good." That is as big a seal of approval as one can get, especially coming from the tween. I try them next, considering the flavors as I chew. They're subtle but tasty too. Melt in my mouth? No. But they are strangely, sort of, kind of good. "You are correct," I say. "Shall I serve you these every night?"
Maybe not every night, unless we can have dessert too.
Brilliant idea. How about we bake brownies? His answer is a resounding yes. After we finish dinner and clean up, we mix the batter, him dropping a dollop of the chocolate mixture onto my nose and me doing the same to him. Naturally, that requires a photo. So I snag my mobile, snap a shot, then send it to Aunt Jane. Her reply is swift. "Aunt Jane,
send some of those brownies straight away. Also, give that boy a kiss from me."
Liam, "Brownies in the mail as we speak. Kisses commencing in 3, 2, 1. I set the phone down. "Want to know the only thing better than baking brownies in August?" I ask Ethan.
"Sure, tell me."
"Swimming while they cook."
"That's dope,"
he declares. Once we put the batter in the oven, we're the dopest as we race each other out to the pool. He cannonballs, then splashes me as I jackknife in.
"You're the rotten egg,"
he shouts.
"Obviously,"
I toss back loudly before I dive under and execute a shark attack that sends him into peals of laughter. We take turns on the slide, then devise a series of races. And the whole time I steal occasional glances at my neighbor's yard, hoping to catch a glimpse of her over the wooden fence between our homes. Hoping she'll hear our shouts and splashes. Hoping she might peer over the fence, wave and say, "Can we join you?" I'd say, "Yes, of course." And then we'd go for a dip. That's appealing for so many reasons. Far too many reasons, like bikinis and droplets of water sliding down soft skin. Because in my imaginary life, she'd wear a tiny bikini, and Ethan would be in bed, and the guaranteed tastegasms would be of an entirely different variety. The next morning, I return the clean Pyrex dish to her deck with some brownies in it and a note on the pan that says, "Good in the kitchen, as promised." Later that evening, I find a note under my door that reads, "Oh, so very good." This time, when I study her penmanship, it seems neat, but also a little more swoopy and seductive than before. Perhaps I'm reading too much into green beans and brownies, or perhaps I'm wanting the wrong things from the woman next door. Chapter 10. Liam. It's tempting, I admit, to use the tagline, "Good in bed," above my photo. After all, that kind of slogan would entice me to click on someone's dating profile. I didn't work on it the night I talked to January after my ride, but a few days later, I removed my sunglasses, setting them down on the sidewalk table, where I'm indulging in an early evening drink with my sister, and I type those words into the profile I'm creating. "What do you think?" I swivel my iPad to face my sister. Her son, Spencer, only a few years older than Ethan, is playing frisbee in the town square with him as a squadron of ducks quack at them. Kerry peers at the boyfriend material app on the screen, then recoils.
"I don't want to hear about you being a good shag."
I roll my eyes.
"That's not the point. The point is, what do you think about it as a headline for a dating app?"
"Yes, that's still my answer, brother of mine," she says. "I don't want to think about your dating, your mating, your shagging, or your snogging."
I cover my heart with my hand, as if overcome.
"Oh, you still think of me as your sweet little brother?"
She arches a brow.
I don't believe I've ever thought of you as sweet. Does anybody? Because you're not, actually. I tut, shaking my head. I'm very, very sweet. No, a Pop-Tart is sweet. A steal of a deal on a bottle of wine is sweet. Sweet is a word that literally no one has used to describe you. You are dry, droll, and sarcastic. I shoot her a look.
That sounds exactly like you.
She preens, lifting her glass.
Takes one to know one.
So, from one droll person to another, neither one of us is sweet.
That is true. But only one of us is trying to get on a dating app, she points out.
Then her tone softens.
So tell me, what are you looking for in a woman?
An image of my next-door neighbor sashays before my eyes. Her lush brown hair, her inked arms, her pouty lips, and most of all, her quick mouth and her agile wit. But it's crazy to think of January in this context. Getting involved with the next-door neighbor is a recipe for trouble. Plus, she's already drawn her lines clearly. She's not interested in a man right now. I soldier on, stopping to take a drink of my red wine. Someone smart, funny, and kind, who loves animals and doesn't want to play the field.
Don't forget, she needs to like cocky men who brag about their bedroom prowess.
I still say it's a brilliant tagline. And since you're not the best person to give me advice on this subject, I'm going to ask someone who is, I say. Then send a quick text to my friend Summer in New York City. She's been good mates with my cousin Oliver since they were 13, so I've come to know her too, and have relied on her for occasional advice about women. Liam, question. Should I use the headline, Good in Bed for a Dating Profile? I feel like it's incredibly clear and totally direct. She replies with several gifs of a woman spitting out a drink of water. I show her replies to my sister. Kerry laughs and gestures to the screen.
See? Even your friend thinks it's a bad idea.
I study the gifs, then stab my finger against the screen for emphasis. No, she's amused by it. That's what this says. She thinks I'm funny. Kerry rolls her brown eyes.
I don't think she's amused by you. I think she finds you amusing. There's a difference.
I think she's wrong. Best to ask, though. Liam. My sister says that you're laughing at me rather than with me. I contend that your gifts mean you think I'm a world-class humor producer. Summer.
I see you still suffer from the inability to read the nuance in front of your face.
Kerry lifts both brows approvingly when she reads the answer.
I like your friend. She knows exactly what you're like.
I can read nuance just fine. All day long I read mammals who can't speak. My sister's eyes roll back into her head.
Oh, right. Being a vet means you're good at dating and good at understanding women because you're good at understanding pussycats and dogs. Your logic is so impeccable, Liam.
I square my shoulders.
Why, thank you very much. Oh, hi,
says a new voice.
You must be the new guy.
A blonde woman with a cheery grin has stopped by our table.
You're the gentleman who's just bought the yellow house on Mallard Lane, aren't you?
I give her a smile. Why, yes, I am.
I'm Nina Clausen. I run the Boba Tea Shop. I'd been hoping to run into you. Would you like to go on a date with my sister?
Did she just say that? I glance at Kerry, who rolls her eyes. I suppose that's a yes. Nina did just say that. Since I'm new in town, and what is an app but a dating intermediary, I decide to treat this the same way I would check out someone's profile to learn more about her. Why don't you tell me about your sister? The peppy blonde proceeds to rattle off the details. Maya is 38, loves Anna Kendrick movies, Kristen Hanna books, Adele's music, prefers coffee over tea, curry over Chinese, and am I free next weekend? Damn, that's speed matchmaking. But before I can answer, and I'm not sure what I'd say, Nina swipes on her phone and shows me a photo. Oh, yes. With a button nose and bow-shaped lips, her sister is quite cute. I send a smug, I told you so, glance to Kerry, then agree to a date with Nina's sister. That sounds fantastic. Why not? This is easier than an app. Way easier. I exchange numbers with Nina, and when she walks away, Kerry shoots death rays at me from her eyes.
What is wrong with the universe?
Seems like the universe knows a good thing when it sees it, I tease.
I bet you walk into your backyard and money falls from a tree too.
Well, I planted it first, but that sounds about right.
It's ridiculous that you've been in town for barely a week and you've gotten a date from somebody literally passing you on the street.
I blow on my fingernails. When you've got it, you've got it, apparently. Ms. Wright, here I come. The tastegasms and temptation of my neighbor be damned.
Chapter 11. Liam. On Monday morning, I finish my tea, set down the cup, then hold my arms out for inspection.
So, what's the verdict? How do I look?
Ethan scrunches up the corner of his lips, then washes his cereal bowl as he gives me the most cursory of cursory appraisals.
Like a dad.
I roll my eyes.
Seriously?
Turning off the tap, he nods.
Seriously? You seriously look like a dad?
I gesture grandly to my outfit.
I am wearing scrubs. How is that a dad outfit?
He shrugs.
You look like a dad to me. You are a dad. Why is it so bad if you look like one?
I'm not wearing white sneakers. Didn't you say you'd disown me if I did?
I wave at my sneakers, which are definitely not white. They are, in fact, Vans.
Summer approved these, which means they're cool.
Fine. Your scrubs and your Vans are...
He stops to sketch air quotes.
Cool.
He says it as if the word tastes bitter.
But you need to stop with the lingo. You just can't do it. It sounds so wrong coming out of your mouth.
I park my hands on my hips. Maybe you just need to admit that you can't handle my coolness.
Dad, it's not even cool anymore. We don't say cool. We say clean, okay?
What in the bloody hell kind of nonsense is that? Clean? My outfit is clean. As in neat and tidy, or as in not on drugs?
No,
he says, choking on a laugh.
Clean means nice, excellent, tight.
So my outfit is clean?
Your outfit is clean as in neat and tidy, but it's not clean as in nice, excellent, tight.
I hold up my arms in surrender.
I'm done.
Good plan, Dad. Very good plan.
We make our way to the door, Ethan stopping to grab his baseball mitt from the table, the one that will vamoose when the new furniture arrives soon. I picture January assembling it. Then I picture how much I'll enjoy watching her assemble it. Then I tell myself to stop enjoying the images so much. I unlock the front door.
Do you have everything? Did you put on sunscreen?
I did. I also just had an idea. If I tell you you're cool, will you play baseball with me after work?
He sounds devilishly strategic, and I'm impressed. I love a Machiavellian brain, especially in a nearly 10-year-old. I stroke my chin, pretending to consider it.
All right, if you insist.
You're cool,
he says, with a couple of I got you nods. I open the door, let him go ahead of me, then pull it closed and lock it.
Joke's on you. I was going to play baseball with you anyway.
He shrugs and gives me a smile.
I know. I just like to pretend I actually think you're cool.
I ruffle his hair as we go down the steps. You are proof sarcasm is genetic.
I am.
As he bounds ahead of me, I linger on that word, genetic. Like that, my mind makes the familiar trip back to Florida and his early years. How else did genetics show up back then? When he walked, when he talked. What was his first word? Shit. I never asked his mum. Now I'll never know. I'll never know either how he looked toddling around the house, flinging mashed peas from a high chair, or learning to ride a bike. I'll never know what it's like to have comforted him when he tumbled and got that first scraped knee. He could already wheel around fine on his own when he arrived in New York. I blink the longing away. Focus on the here and now. Once inside the garage, we grab our gleaming new bikes from the rack. I roll them out to the driveway, stopping to press the button to close the garage behind us. As I strap on my helmet,
My eyes are drawn to next door. Where? Just my luck. January is loading a toolbox into her truck. I devour the view. She's wearing work boots, jeans, and a tight pink t-shirt with the logo reading, Jackie of All Trades. And hell does her ass look great in those jeans. But then it looks great in everything. Probably in nothing too, come to think of it. I banish the dirty thought as she swivels around, raises her shades, then says,
Are you off for a bike ride?
It comes out sounding confused, even though we're both standing here with bikes. Are we?
You're in scrubs,
she says, pointing.
That's why I asked.
I look pretty cool in scrubs, don't I? She arches a doubtful brow.
I think if they had pink unicorns on them, they'd be cooler.
Duly noted.
And where are you heading, Ethan?
She asks him. But before he can answer, I chime in, unable to resist poking fun at my kid. Is it your papier-mâché camp?
Oh, wait, is it pottery making?
No, it's underwater basket weaving, right? He cracks up, then turns to January and squeaks.
Baseball camp! I like baseball. Actually, that's wrong. I love baseball. You have excellent taste in sports, she says.
He's a junkie for America's pastime, I tell her. As am I. Is that genetic too? Or did it start when he moved in with me? Certainly his love of the sport grew stronger. Regular attendance at Yankee Stadium will do that to a lad. Ethan smacks his palm against his forehead.
Dad, I did forget my sunscreen.
He sets the bike on the driveway, races up the steps and unlocks the door. While he's inside, January cuts across the lawn, standing near me in the driveway.
So you're going to ride into work looking like that?
My brow furrows. Yes, is that a problem?
You realize you'll get double the number of dates that you did sitting at the wine bar the other day.
Gossip had carried the tale to her long before I had a chance to share the story. Double? More than when I dine outside? Whoa.
Hello? Hot, healthy, eco-conscious vet who rides a bike to work?
I like the sound of that when she says it. My skin sizzles. So I'm a hot vet? She rolls her eyes, then shoos me away.
Don't act like you didn't know that, Liam.
She flicks her fingers, telling me to be on my way, as Ethan returns and hops onto his bike. I hop onto mine, waving goodbye, and I savor that very lovely compliment that I shouldn't like so much, but I do. Oh, I absolutely do. After I drop Ethan off at the baseball park, I ride a few miles to the building marked with a sign that reads, Lucky Falls Veterinary Practice, Dr. Harris, DVM. The practice is on a side street, also occupied by a spa and a hair salon. You can get pampered while your pet gets poked. It's only a couple of miles away from Duck Falls. I pull into the lot, my eyes drifting to the sign, my heart squeezing tightly as I think about that, Dr. Harris. The first one, the reason I moved from one coast to the other. That Dr. Harris waits for me in the small parking lot, next to my mum, who leans against the hood of her car, holding his hand. I rest the bike against the side of the building, then head over to them. Hi, Mum.
Hi, Dad.
Hi, Liam, he says in that gruff voice I've known my entire life. The sound that I heard booming up the stairs when I was in trouble. The sound that I heard shouting, yes, when I won science awards. The voice has varied. That gruffness was tempered with sweetness after my first broken heart. And again, after I first learned the shocking news that I had a son, when he told me that he would help me figure out how to be a great dad. All of those memories collide at once, and they pummel me with an unexpected wave of emotion. I should be used to those overwhelming feelings when I'm around him these days. I swallow them down, shove them out of sight, and put on my best chipper face as I join them. He squints at me from behind his glasses, and I hide a wince. How's it going, Liam? Are you ready for today? He's all tough and serious. He's softer with animals, but with his kids, he's always kept the pedal on the stoic side. I am, Dad. Just remind me, Is the tailbone still connected to the leg bone? He laughs and claps me on the shoulder, his palm wrapping around me. Good one. It's the caudal vertebrae. My mouth forms an exaggerated O. Is that what it's called? I had no idea. He shakes his head. Smart ass. Anyway, I wanted to bring you this. He turns around and peers into the car, searching for a few more seconds than usual.
On the console, love,
my mum says. He reaches inside, grabs a thermos of English breakfast tea, unless I very much miss my guess, then gives it to me. Just like my mum gave him every day before work. The tradition now handed down from father to son. A lump forms in my throat at the way he's trying to make this seem like a normal transition. As if all he's done is retire and hand over his beloved practice to me. I take the thermos, trying to keep my tone even, so it's not as wobbly as I feel. Thank you. He gives me an almost imperceptible nod, then tips his forehead toward the light blue cottage-style building that houses the veterinary practice that he ran for more than 20 years. I appreciate you doing this. He's not big on hearts and flowers, so his spoken gratitude is the equivalent of a brass band marching through town in my honor. And I appreciate you giving me the chance to help out, I say, though that hardly seems sufficient. Or accurate. Giving me the chance implies that he had a choice, that to continue was an option. It took him long enough to accept the facts and step down. My mum practically begged him. A few months ago, when he rang me up, potholes in his voice, and asked if I would come home and take over, I didn't think twice. I simply said yes. I had 5 business partners at my practice in New York. I was also the junior vet. He ran this practice solo. Now he stares at the front door, shiny with its fresh coat of white paint. It's something Mum took care of, hiring painters to spruce up the place. New paint for the new vet. Are you ready for next month? I ask, trying to focus on practical matters. In this case, his 3rd surgery coming up. He scoffs and waves a hand. Don't worry about me. But I do.
We all do,
my mum chimes in. I'm going to be fine, so let me worry about you. He takes a few steps toward the door. Do you have everything you need in there? He rattles off all the standard supplies of any veterinary practice, and I simply nod, letting him know that I'm all sorted. At the door, he barrels inside, doing his damnedest to show me around. Even though I've spent the last week prepping and familiarizing myself with the clinic, getting ready to take over his business, as my father goes blind. 20 minutes later, the vet tech comes in. A pink-haired 50-something woman with triple ear piercings and a sweet cooing voice that all the dogs seem to love, and we get to work. The hardest part is when the clients start asking, "Is everything okay with your dad?" I do my best. Give them a smile and the scripted line, "He just thought it was time. He's ready for a change. Ready to retire. Now, let's take a look at Percutio's teeth." My dad doesn't want to share the true reason, not wanting anyone to feel sorry for him. I'm not going to be the one to say, "Oh, well, it turns out he has this rare disease where he's going blind, and he's going to require 5 surgeries and still lose most of his vision." Besides, the story is plausible. He's 62, near retirement age, even though the truth is that he would have worked for as long as he possibly could have. At the end of the day, my final client arrives, a gray-haired woman with sharp blue eyes and a Papillon Chihuahua mix.
"She's so picky. She only likes to eat the steak or chicken or turkey I prepare for her."
"Rather than dog kibble?"
"Yes. She turns up her nose at it when they feed her at the doggy bed and breakfast, when I go to see my friends in the city overnight."
"And how long have you been feeding her home-cooked meals?"
"About a year now."
"Perhaps ask the B&B if they have a fridge. Bring her what she's used to."
"Brilliant,"
she says, as if I just answered all her woes. Then she swings the conversation in a sharp right turn.
"On to other matters, Dr. Harris. I live down the street from you in Duck Falls. What are the chances you'd like to take my daughter,
Missy out for dinner.
Ah, seems January was wrong. I didn't need to ride my bike to attract another date. But all things considered, this seems much better than a dating app. It's a dating app delivered to my doorstep, like Grubhub for women. Later, when Ethan is taking a shower, I pop outside to check the mailbox, since I forgot to when I returned home. And lucky me, January is kneeling in her front yard, tending to the flowers. Her gaze catches mine.
How was your first day, Dr. Doolittle? Did any of your clients try to set you up? Or was it all of them? My money is on the ladder.
Laughing, I head over and join her. I only had 2 requests for dates.
I'd have expected 4. You're losing your touch.
She brushes her hands against her legs and leaves streaks of soil on them. As she rises, she pushes her hair out of her eyes. The whole effect is wildly sexy. I never knew I was that into her type. That is, if she is a type. If she is, I would call it insanely self-sufficiently sexy. I have to content myself with 2 or 3, I say, continuing the conversation. She pats me on the arm.
This town, I don't know if you've noticed, but it's a small town where men are in short supply. Who's the next date with?
A woman named Missy, Betty Juniper's daughter. January's eyes light up.
Oh, Missy's great. Outgoing and friendly. She owns the lingerie shop and does such a bang-up job that she's nabbed best-of accolades in all the area newspapers and lists. She's open-minded about nearly everything except fish.
Fish? Why's that?
In high school, she threw up fish sticks one day, and everyone called her Fishy Missy for days. And it really caused a lot of trauma for her. So don't order fish when you're with her.
Good to know, I say, taking in this bizarre but important fact. Perhaps I should come to you before every date and get a full briefing. She smiles.
That's not a bad idea. Think of me as your dating insider.
I like the idea of spending more time with her. I hate the constant reminders that she's not the one I'm dating, but that's fine. It's perfectly, absolutely fine. At least, that's what I'm telling myself. Chapter 12. Liam. It's Thursday night. Date night. Ethan's at Carrie's house, and I have the place to myself to get ready. I shower, get dressed, and check the time. About 30 minutes before I meet Nina's sister Maya at the wine bar. Just enough time to walk to town. Why drive when I have feet or a pair of bicycle tires? I head down the front steps as the familiar rumble of a pink truck echoes across the lawn, pulling into the driveway next door. Like I'm Pavlov's dog, a rush of heat slides down my spine at the sound, then spreads across my chest when I see January cut the engine. A grin tugs at my lips. This is my favorite time of day, anytime I run into her. She opens the door and steps out of the truck, her daughter swinging open the door on the other side, barely giving anyone a second glance as she rushes up the stairs, propelled by jet fuel, the front door slamming behind her in a dark blonde Spitfire blur. Everything okay? January waves a hand toward the cheetah of a teenager.
Oh, she's totally fine. She has a FaceTime sesh with her friend Audrey and can't be late. They're deciding what to sample in their next YouTube video. Panda cookies or chocolate mushrooms?
Not panda cookies, please.
It's a brand, not made of pandas or for pandas.
I wipe a hand across my brow. Phew, I feel loads better. January eyes me up and down, bright blue eyes traveling along my frame.
I see you're in your dating gear.
I am indeed. I tug at an imaginary bow tie. I couldn't decide between the bow tie or the stone-washed jeans, so I wore this instead. Good compromise? With that deadpan expression I enjoy so much, she nods.
Yes, but I would give good money to see you in stone-washed denim.
I gesture to my house. How much? $20?
Bargain basement. Do it,
she says with a sly grin. Don't tempt me.
$20 covers wine. She arches one dubious brow.
You clearly haven't set foot in Oscar's wine bar, then.
True. Kerry did pay the other day. I'll take 10, then. Enough for a tip. Should I put them on right now?
Duet, duet,
she chants. I tip my head toward the street, laughing. Next time. I promise to give you a fashion show, but I should be getting on. I take a beat, studying her and wondering if her gaze isn't tinged with perhaps a touch of longing. Or maybe I'm simply wishing. Unless you'd like to join me for a walk into town. I leave that invitation hanging in the air, as my chest flips with the hope that she'll say yes. It's strange, this sensation of waiting for something, wanting something. Her smile spreads slow and easy, and her yes seems to float across her eyes. But I don't want to assume.
I would love to.
It's not dry, it's not sarcastic, and it's not deadpan. They're just four lovely words that I relish hearing from her. She holds up her hands.
Just give me a second to wash up. I was working all day. And to let Wednesday know she's cooking for me tonight.
She cooks? January lights up with a cartoonishly large smile.
Yes, I highly recommend acquiring children who are useful. She loves to cook. I think it's because she loves workarounds, and she searches for cooking hacks for nearly every recipe.
Because recipes shouldn't be followed?
Psh, hacks are so much more fun.
I suppose I can't argue with that. She darts inside and returns a minute later, showing off her clean palms.
My hands are spick and span, and my kid is going to make pasta salad with zucchini noodles instead of noodle noodles. Feel free to shudder.
I do. Zucchini is the worst. She pats my shoulder.
You don't know what you're missing, Doc.